I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kevin. So, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the SCI meeting on Tuesday, 2nd of July, 2013. On the call today, we have James Plato, Ron Andrews, Angie Gray, Wolf Ulrich Norman, Mike O'Connor, and Ethan Steady. And Avery Doria and Kimber. We have apologies from Jennifer Wall. And from staff, we have Julie Hedlund and myself, Julia Chevalier.
Oh, and also, Julia, Kent, did you mention Ken Bauer? Sorry.
Yes, I have. I have.
Okay, sorry.
I would just like to finish, if I could remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for all getting on the call today. As usual, we have a full schedule of things we've been discussing, so if we can just go quickly, any changes to your statements of interest in the course of the last month since we've met? Hearing none, we move forward to the approval of the agenda. Do we have agreement on the agenda today? Very good. We're now on number four, the resubmitting a motion, and we have 15 minutes to discuss this topic. As we see that there were two channels to go down, one was leave it to the discretion of the chair, and or the other was to set one or more high-level criteria in this order. And there are four elements. There's been a number of different views coming from the various constituencies as we've gone through this. There's also a series of questions that Marika asked, as we note on the bottom of this sheet we're looking at. The first question is the question of determination. Who would make a determination in terms of what has to be resubmitted, words added or not? The second has to do with the PDP manual, and it's looking at the perspective of this is, I think, language that we had already drafted in the past, or have we had some relation to, because it looks very familiar. It's about what are the requirements for this renewed vote. And the third one, then, a 12-month period, appears to be a long time to be able to reconsider a motion. So with each of the points at hand, I'd like to take a cue to see how we'd like to begin to address this, please. Do I have anyone to take up the issue? Have I fallen off the call?
I can hear you, Ron. This is Julie.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I think the issue then comes down to, if there's no comments coming from anyone on the call, I would recommend that we take two levels of action. We can take this back to the GNSO Council for them to take the vote on whether we leave it up to the discretion of the chair or we set one or more high-level criteria. So in that case, why don't we look at the criteria and determine which criteria we would like to have, and from that point we can send them the choice back to the GNSO Council. I see James' hand. Please go ahead, James.
Thank you, Ron. James Blayle speaking for transcript. And it's possible that I am misremembering either the call or I have the wrong impression from the chat on the mailing list, but I thought that we had kind of all started to congeal around option two, but we were still discussing what the criteria would be, how many, and what the language should be. But so I guess my question is number one still a viable option, or is this group still just more about polishing what we want to say for option two? Or did I miss a call? I guess that's a possibility as well. I completely missed a meeting where we discussed another alternative.
Thanks, James. The fact is that I think this has gone kind of once around the football field, and it's coming back around again, in so much as there are there was discussion about moving on just to select a couple of criteria. Then there was some discussion about the chair. And I don't think we've had enough voices to flesh this out completely. So your question is not misappropriate in any way. So perhaps others might want to comment. My. I've never heard quite a... Yes, please. Go ahead, James.
Julie was going to... I'll defer to staff. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
She had her hand up first. Julie had her hand up first. I'm sorry.
I beg your pardon. Very good. Julie, please, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much, Ron. This is Julie Headland. If you scroll down the document that I have in Adobe Connect, and I have unsynced it so you can control it yourself, there were a couple of comments on the list that we took up at the last meeting on June 4th, and I think this does speak to James's question. We had been coalescing around option two. We had been waiting for additional comments from a couple of other groups, which we did get. And as you'll see here, it was an issue of the criteria. IPC had agreed to the first two criteria listed in item two, and the registrars agreed with the proposed criteria under item two except for 2.4. So actually, I really should not have included the leave up to discretion of chair option for this discussion today, because I have to say that that was misleading. We really are discussing the option two and the criteria there, and I think it was the lack of agreement on which criteria we wanted to use that is the issue. And then we have the additional questions from Marika. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Julie. That is very helpful. That gets us all on the same page. So coming back to that then, we're looking at opportunity four different choices. Love to hear from the committee what your thoughts are on these different elements before we start to address Marika's questions. James, please go ahead.
Thank you, Ron. James speaking for the transcript. And thank you, Julie, for clearing that up. I remembered it the same way because originally I had been a proponent of option one, and I had my mind, my opinion, changed on that by the discussion. So that's kind of one way to help remember things is when you're wrong. So thanks for pointing that out for us. And I wanted to just clarify that registrars, it's not that we were in opposition to criteria number 2.4, I guess is what we're calling it. It was more a function that registrars believed that if 1, 2, and 3 were adopted, that 4 became redundant. I believe that was the statement that we were gathering from the feedback from registrars, that that if we adopted the first three, that four was just more of a extraneous consideration. So with that, unfortunately, as I posted in the chat box, I do have an appointment that I will have to drop here in a few minutes, so I won't be around for the bulk of Marika's questions. But I think if we are ready to approach council with some flavor of scenario two, then I think we're on the right track. Thank you.
So, but James, if I also may just catch you before you go, did you not specifically say 1 and 2 were your preferences, or was it 2 and 3?
For registrars, I believe their position or the feedback that, that Jennifer and I received was that 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3, were they were supportive of those, and that they believed that 2.4 was
redundant,
kind of,
yeah,
baked into those other three, yes.
Yeah.
So that,
yeah,
if they were adopted, that 2.4 was redundant, correct.
Very good. Thank you very much, James. I appreciate that. And we'll take it from here then. Thank you. So very good. So we're getting much more clarity on this. So now we're down to 2.1, 2, and 3, unless someone has an opinion as to why we should keep 4 in this discussion. So hearing none, we'll drop 4, and now we're looking at the question of the three high-level criteria that you're looking at here. Provide reason to justify the submission of a motion. And number one, publish the text of resubmitting a motion. Number two and number three, require a seconder. Thoughts or comments, please?
Ron, it's Ann. I'm sorry I just joined the call. I had a lot of trouble getting in.
Welcome, Ann. No problem.
Yeah, it's from our side.
Question?
It's not from your side. But
no, not at all. Did you hear what I just said, or would you like me to repeat it?
I think that you were calling for comment on the resubmission of the motion. Is that?
Yes, in fact, yeah. In fact, we're talking about two. We're more or less settled on a resubmission of a motion. There was an option one and option two. That's been clarified by Julie that option one, giving it back to the discretion of the chair, was not an option, so it's been taken off the table. We're now on number two, and specifically James brought up the fact that number 2.4 would be a redundant element if one through three were carried out and none of the committee had any objection to removing it. So now we're discussing these three level of criteria. Do we want one, two, or three levels of criteria, and if so, why? So I've opened the floor, and so your timing is excellent.
Okay, thank you.
So, Avery, Mikey, Wolf Ulrich, what are your thoughts on one, two, or three?
Hello, it's Wolf who is speaking, yeah?
Yes, please, Wolf.
Yes. I'm fine with these points, but it came to my mind after I saw questions from Marika with regards to the deadlines, you know, set here 8 days prior to the next GNSO Council meeting. So this includes the question... For me, it puts a question as to how much time could be left, you know, from the submitting the first submission of this motion until the resubmission. So, is it more than X council meetings or whatever to be submitted? So, and that is a question for me which came up, and whether we should. Discuss that and to put a figure here into the criteria.
My understanding of that, Wolf Ulrich, was that the motion had to be resubmitted. That when it is asked for, there was a deadline, and that deadline we were put forward. But I didn't understand that to be a 12 months out or anything like that. In my view, that was also a very short lead time. Perhaps. Aubrey might bring some thought to that, but it seems to me it was a very short lead time on the resubmission of a vote. We had set the very next next council meeting, as I understood it, and then there was determination as to what that was going to be. So this kind of takes into account what Marika is saying in her first question, what is included in a resubmission in terms of wording, and I think the language has to be very, very much similar. I see Aubrey's raised her hand, so please, Aubrey.
Hi. I raised my hand because you asked me to.
Thank you very much.
I think that certainly a year was too far out. To say next meeting could be problematic if it's having more than one meeting. So, yeah, if you want to put a time limit in it, though I don't really think it's needed, but if you want to put a time limit in, I'd suggest 2 or 3 months because that could be just 2 or 3 meetings maximum. So skipping one meeting might happen. Skipping two is probably getting too long. You might as well refile the motion. So I'd say within 2 months, something like that.
Yeah.
Does that feel right to you, Wolf?
Yes, I agree to that. So I would be fine. I was also thinking, you know, that just the next meeting would be maybe too short. Yeah, but one meeting left, you know, means that the second. The second following meeting could be agreeable.
I think that makes sense as well, because that would give the individual that wants that motion resubmitted time to socialize it amongst his colleagues, his or her colleagues, and get some consensus. So I would support that. Is there anyone on the committee that has any issue with putting in? And the language I would look for would be the second meeting following the submission of the motion. Seeing no one opposed, then I think that we can certainly move that forward.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Wolf and Aubrey. So then the second point was to publish the text of the resubmitted motion.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Ron. Unfortunately, I'm having technical difficulties. It's Ann, and I'm not able to raise my hand.
Oh, please. I'm sorry, Ann. Go ahead. No problem.
I can't see anything on the screen, unfortunately, but I did want to reiterate that the as far as IPC is concerned, there was only agreement to the first two items in option two, and I don't know if you covered before I got on the phone that GNSO Council has now changed the time period for submission of a motion to 10 calendar days, effective at 11:59 UTC, rather than the previous 8 days.
That's fine. Thank you very much for that, particularly with the change. So that will be in, I think then Julie will catch that and make that change in this document accordingly. And with regard to the first two, in fact, we are actually talking about the second one as we speak. So Julie has raised her hand. Please, Julie.
Yeah, thank you, Ron, and thank you, Anne. I did actually, to your first point, in the document that's on the screen, which you can't see, but at least for reference of others and for yourself, there is the email that you had sent where it is true that you had noted that the IPC agreed to the first two criteria listed in item two, so 2.1 and 2.2. With respect to the change for submitting a motion to 10 calendar days, in the conversation we just had on the time limit for resubmitting a motion, I thought we discussed so I guess what we did, sorry, I think I misunderstood. So in my change, it would be resubmitted by the second meeting following the resubmission of the motion, following the initial motion, pardon me, and then we would include the 10 calendar days. But I just want to go ahead and confirm that I captured that. Thanks.
That sounds fine from my point of view. Anne, do you have any issues with that logic?
So are we saying that we will have, and fortunately I'm now into the screen, but are we saying that this is going to be redrafted before it goes anywhere else to reflect that change in to the 10 days? I'm confused. Sorry.
Yes. The okay. Answer would be yes. Yeah.
And then with respect to, I'm, again, I apologize since I got this.
No apologies necessary.
What I'm trying to figure out at this point is I heard you make a reference to publishing this, but I didn't hear an actual consensus on the criteria.
No, what we were getting to was on. Can you see the screen now?
Yes.
Possible options.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. So we're
Oh, and it has the questions from Marika. Okay, good. Okay.
Right. And so if you look for what's 2.2, effectively, that's what I was reading. So what we had agreed on 2.1, we've agreed on the timing of this now, pursuant to this conversation we just had, and
uh-huh.
2.2 is now talking about the text of the resubmission. That has relevance to the first question of Marika, who makes the determination whether it considers a resubmission of a motion or whether it's considered a new motion. Does it have to be identical to be considered a resubmission? If a few words are added or whereas clauses are introduced, does that make it a new motion? End quote. So I'm not sure about the rest of the committee, but my view on this is that if it's a resubmission of a motion, it should be a resubmission of that motion. When you start to modify it, it becomes a new motion. And I'd like to kind of open the dialogue from there. Do you agree that it would be a new motion if, in fact, new words are added and new clauses are added, or is it the same motion with new clauses? New clause. And I see Aubrey's hand, and I'm not sure who spoke up, but you're certainly welcome to speak before Aubrey if you like.
Does somebody call
me? Aubrey, please.
Okay. I would think that it should essentially be the same wording, but of course it's as subject to friendly amendments as any motion is. So now, you know, it's always been a good question whether a person can offer their own friendly amendment and accept it themselves, and I don't think there's ever been a question on it or a ruling on it, but it has been an accepted process. But by and large, this council works on friendly amendments. So if it's something that the original people support and accept as a friendly amendment, I don't see why that would make it a different motion. Thanks.
Thank you, Robert. Does anyone have any pushback on the idea that we move forward with the language that Aubrey and I have just more or less explained with regard to resubmission? It does not have new wording, but it is subject to friendly amendments, as is the standard practice today. Very good. Julie, could you just scroll back to number two, please? Thank you. So what we've now done is we've covered the high-level criteria 1 and 2, but we've heard that the IPC has a problem with recognizing the third one, a seconder of the motion from each house, as a prerequisite. And I guess I would ask you, Anne, where were you finding pushback? Because it appears to me on its face that if you had two seconders for a motion, then it means that you're gaining consensus. Please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Ron. This is Anne with the IPC, and this subject was fully addressed in a full meeting of the IPC at the ICANN Beijing meeting, and this particular condition was discussed in terms of whether or not you would actually ever, as a practical matter, be able to resubmit a motion. And I think that there was, a lot of discussion on the point that that this particular condition might, in effect, prevent you from ever being able to resubmit a motion for any reason.
Okay.
Just because of the structure of the council.
True, but the fact of the matter is it's an unfortunate situation we find ourselves in, where we have things like in the United States, a Congress that doesn't function for its own various reasons, but it just doesn't function. And the same way within the ICANN body, we have a GNSO council that's not functioning as well as we would hope, but we have to hope that rules we would make or propose to the GNSO council to approve would in fact function well in a well-functioning GNSO council. So I find it interesting, though, that if I understood you correctly, you said the first part was that most of the people in the room felt that they would not see resubmissions very often. Did I understand you correctly, or perhaps I misunderstood?
I think in terms of the depending on the subject matter, a lot, of course, depends on where the constituencies fall in terms of their interests. The thought is that, requiring someone from both houses might actually require somebody from, if you will, the opposing house to go against a prior vote that they'd made with respect to the motion the first time that the motion was submitted. And, whether or not that's, you agree with that position, that's the IPC position, that it shouldn't require that big of a hurdle to reintroduce a motion.
So putting
somebody on the other side of the house with the in the position of having to reverse a previous vote.
Understood. No, I see I'm caught between two realists, you and Aubrey Doria. She notes in the chat, if you can't get someone from the other house to second it, it ain't going to pass. And so therefore, if anyone has a difficulty with removing then three as well, and we go forward and we send to council the first and second high-level criteria for the submission, if we can move this forward, that would be excellent. I see Mikey's hand up. Please, go ahead.
This is Mikey. I note that we have nobody from the contracted party's house here right now. And I think I'm a little uncomfortable making that decision without James or somebody from the registries able. And I tend to agree with Aubrey. You know, if I think one of the contentious issues in this, and I have to admit I've been on the council and feel a little bit outside scope on this, that there's a thread on the list about this, but it seems to me that the way the council's structured, Aubrey's got the right of it. If you can't get anybody from the other house to sign on to the motion, then we get into the scenario that we're trying to avoid, where motions are basically reintroduced forever until they pass. And I think that would probably annoy both sides of the house. I'm living in a completely different situation with that very problem here in Wisconsin. And I don't think we want to go there. So at a minimum, I think we've got to get James back on the call and talk.
That's fine. Well, you raise a good point of order, and so let's just, it's time to move on. In any case, I've given this more time because we've really, I think, narrowed it down to this last issue. Having received good input from the committee, we will now adjourn this item to the next discussion we have in terms of a meeting, and I think we will note that the first bullet of Marika is no longer relevant. We've addressed that, and we've addressed a couple of other issues. We'll get a clean document back in front of us, and we'll take it from there. Thank you all. So now we're moving on to number five on the agenda, which is the SCI charter revision. And there were some changes from Aubrey and from Mikey that brought back to the charter. There's a lot of discussion on this, and it has been for some time, as we all know, and I'm now of a mind that we need to really take it outside of the SCI and perhaps give this discussion back to the GNSO Council as to whether or not an SCI has value or not. I think what's happening here, we're navel-gazing a little bit, and we've got varying opinions. We've had a very robust discussion and dialogue over the course of the last couple of years as we've tried to nail down, the kinks that come with policy development and send them back to council for discussion. I've enjoyed the discussion and dialogue immensely, but I'm just questioning now as well whether we should be continuing, and we have Mikey's voice loud and strong that we should not. So happy to have a conversation about this in more detail, and certainly what I've just proposed, and we've got now time on the agenda to do so. So I'll open it up and look for discussion. Julie, please go ahead.
This is Julie Hedlund. I just wanted to clarify something as I was looking at Mikey's changes to the latest version of the charter. Mikey has put in there that quoting in the first paragraph, that this is the last in a series of committees defined and implemented changes to the policy development process. Actually, the Operations Steering Committee and the Policy Development Process Work Team did more than just make changes to the policy development process. The Operations Steering Committee covered guidelines for constituencies and stakeholder groups, quite a range of issues there. And the Policy Development Process Team had two working groups, work teams, one that dealt with working group processes, and that one produced the working group guidelines. And then the policy development process work team did indeed produce the PDP manual. But I just wanted to note that the scope is not limited to policy development process, but at least as far as the initial scope of the PSP and the PSP.
Thank you, Julie. Very much appreciate that. Mike, I see your hands raised.
Julie, that's a good catch. My main point in trying to frame that was to ground this committee in that broader effort. And so I would take your thoughts as a friendly improvement to that paragraph. That wasn't my intent. My main intent is to keep us a project and not turn us into a fiction. This is something that's come up pretty late on the list. And I don't know that that's navel-gazing. I think it's a very important distinction. I mean, if this is an ongoing rules committee of the council, that's fine. But it's a huge change from what I think the original charter was, which was to be the caboose. And so I think I've misframed what we're the caboose of, and so that's why I think Julie's point is very well taken, and view that as friendly. But I also agree with Ron that it might be a good idea to take this question back to the council and just frame it as that and say, you know, look, we were chartered to be a project that's the end of a series of projects. We're considering revising that charter to become essentially a permanent subcommittee of the council, is the way that I kind of view this. What do you think? And I think I've never sat on the council and never will, because I don't think the council needs any more white guys from North America. But I think if I was on the council, I'd probably say, no, I don't want you to be a rules committee of the council. I want you to be the project you were originally chartered to be. But I think they might be a good gang to ask that question of.
Thank you, Mikey. Any other thoughts, comments? All right, then, hearing none, I'm going to do exactly that. I'll work with Julie. We'll frame some language, and we will send it to the list and to the chair of the GNSO Council. Wolf Ulrich, we are probably much too late to get on the council right now, but perhaps we can do this in the form of a letter. Your thoughts?
You mean to put that thing, you know,
not to council, but to send something to the
right now, or as a
no. I'm sorry, Grofler. I was trying to say, beg your pardon for interrupting you. I hear we have a time lag between my voice speaking and you hearing, but I wanted to say that I'm suggesting we would send this over in the form of a letter as an advisement to bring it onto the agenda at some point. How would you see this in terms of informing the council? That's more what my question. I beg your pardon.
Well, this is the way how it works. The question is whether it could be taken to the agenda of the next council meeting or not. So this is that's the only thing, you know. But that is, for example, for the next council meeting, we shall have a prep call next Monday. So if you put that forward, that question, you know, and we can talk about next Monday about that, because we are talking about the agenda, the council meeting agenda in Durban, then it may happen.
Well, it's a question of timing, I'm sure, and I see Mikey has noted in the chat, can the committee look at it before it goes to council? And the answer is, of course, we'll send it around to the committee for review. So it's a question of timing, and see if we can turn something around quickly. But perhaps you could inquire with the chair and let me know, both Ulrich, if we're rushing for no sake or if we're rushing for good sake. And we will try to turn something around in that regard. Does that work for you?
Yes, I can do that.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So now that takes us to point number six, then.
Ron, I had my hand up. This is Julie.
I beg your pardon, Julie. I see so many microphones lit up in my box. I can't see the hands. Go ahead.
Just a quick clarification for my sake. So the letter to the council is simply on the question of the scope of the SEI. Is that correct? Because I don't think that everyone has necessarily agreed to the language that's in this latest version of the charter. And in fact, I'd have to make some changes to it to address the issue about the PDP language that Mikey has in there. So I just want to. I'm sorry if I'm asking.
No, not at all. Let me tell you, we're crossing wires a little bit. This charter that we're looking at right now has not had any discussion whatsoever within the group, except with a little bit online and the chat. Now, before we take another step further forward, I'm suggesting that we will send a letter to the GNSO Council Chair, advising them that within the committee we have had some discussions about revising our charter, and some members of the committee are feeling that, well, without even getting into that, we can just say, so we're now, the question is, do we revise our charter as a committee that goes forward, or do we revise our charter as a committee that comes to an end? And, please advise us. So the exact language on that we can shape together, and then we'll send it around to the committee for their review, and then we'll send it on to the chair of the GNSO Council.
And just a follow-up question then, Ron. Sorry, and I know Wolf already had his hand up. As you know, and I sent some slides earlier to you and Avery, there is an update from you to the council on Saturday in Durban. This would certainly be also a very useful discussion to have during that working session, and I'd be happy to add a little bit more language to those slides to frame this question. I'm not saying that this would take the place of a letter to the chair, but the letter to the chair then could be that this is teeing up for a discussion in Durban. The council then does have the option in that working session to decide whether or not to add the item to its agenda for its public meeting.
Very good. Thank you, Julie. That's excellent. I see Wolf Ulrich has moved from speaking to checkmark. He agrees. Anne agrees. So, excellent. Anyone opposed to that? Will be following that process? I'm seeing none. I'm sorry, Wolf Ulrich, go ahead, please. And Julie, I see your hand back up again, Julie.
It was just back up. So I would just support what Julie was saying. It's a good opportunity at the Saturday meeting on council, where you have, I'm not sure whether you will be available for that. We have a 15-minute slot for the SCI.
I am available. I have it on my schedule, indeed.
Yes. Okay. So that would be the best opportunity, well, to come up with that.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. All right. Moving on with the agenda, unless there's any other comments in that regard. I'm sorry, we will not see you in Durban, Anne. I see in the chat. Mm-hmm. All right, we move on now to item number 6, working group self-assessment. To bring this into perspective a little bit, we were looking at a handmade poll that we had designed at one point, and we're wondering whether or not it would work. We talked about the different types of language we had, did it ourselves, and found out that we were lacking. And so Ken Barr was brought in to assist us. And Ken has done some exceptional work in the last period and suggested that we can also be baking this in, better said, into the actual working group charters and so forth. And so he's done some exceptional work on that. We understand that nothing can be shared because it's on the wiki, but there was a link sent around, and perhaps you can post that link in the chat, Julie, so that members can quickly go to have a look at that document. And Ken, you would start, and in the email you sent in the last 24 hours, you mentioned that you would be starting on draft 2. Perhaps you could give us a quick summary of how draft 1 ended and where draft 2 is going. Thank you.
Yes. Hi, Ron. Hello, everyone. Basically, the first draft of the questionnaire was an attempt to take as much material from the working group guidelines and charter that could be used to frame questions that would give us something important to learn about how well a working group functioned to achieve, if it did achieve its mission, or if it didn't, why not? So the idea, the structure is, you know, I started with some design considerations, and I won't go through them, but there's a separate page in which I talked about a number of things and what the focus should be, certain demographic things I thought we ought to take a look at, a methodology and so forth. And then the next thing I did was to sort of set out some learning objectives. Again, I won't go through those in detail, but those were developed from the working group guidelines, charter, templates, anything I could get my hands on. You know, what would we like to know about the effectiveness of the working group? And then from there, I drafted the first set of questions, which is under questionnaire draft one. And then I sent that material out to you guys, and one of the things, for example, in my first draft, I used a 5-point rating scale. Aubrey pointed out that, you know, it might be better to constrain respondents to a 7-point scale. And I absolutely agreed with that, and in fact, my normal approach is to use 7-point scales wherever possible. And the only reason I went to 5 was because in the customer satisfaction survey that ICANN did, that I created, management at ICANN thought we should drop from 7 to 5, and I kind of just remembered that and thought that might be where we would go. But happily, I have pushed it now to a 7-point scale in draft V2. The other thing that happened is Mikey O'Connor made some interesting points about what he was asking questions around. Should we be looking at the PDP process while we are looking at the working groups? They are very intricately intertwined, but they are separate and distinct issues. Nonetheless, it helped me think through a way to restructure the survey, which I did in draft two. And I kind of reconceptualized it as having three fundamental pieces or elements: inputs, processes, and outputs. And so I restructured it on that basis. And as I did, I noticed that he was right. One of the major inputs that any working group has is its charter and its mission. And one of the things that can be included in a charter and a mission are various constraints, meaning this particular working group must use the PDP process. That's a constraint that's part of the charter and mission, and we weren't evaluating that in draft one. So I added a question to capture that in draft two. I may not have gone far enough in Mikey's view, but that was one of the changes that I made. There were several others. I noticed that we weren't looking at a few other inputs carefully enough. So the input section ended up with 6 separate questions. The processes ended up with 4. Actually, a couple moved, changed places. Products and outputs stayed the same, and personal fulfillment largely stayed the same. So that's where draft 2 is at the moment. So that's kind of a quick recognition of how we got there. What I wanted to do was actually walk through with you the structure of draft 2 questionnaire, and just to save you having to sort of fend your way through that on your own. And then Wolf Ulrich had raised a couple of questions, which he actually posted to the page itself, and I have answered those, and we can take a look at those as well. If that's a decent summary, I would try to go ahead and begin, so I'll pause.
Sure, Ken. Absolutely. No, I would just I will ask if any committee members have questions, but I just would make a comment while we wait that it seems to me in 7, the going on a scale of 1 to 7 means you're going to have much more nuanced research. But the question is, can we then use that data in a much more, can we capture that nuanced data when it's not quite having so much, let's call it sharp edges? It's more, you know, I'm not sure if it's 5 or 6. Can we actually glean more information from that, and who and how will that be done?
I'll take a shot at answering. The question of scaling is an intriguing one, and there's lots of points of view about it. You know, some people actually use 11 and 13-point scales, 10-point scales, and some of the decisions one of the questions one asks about that is, do I want a midpoint? Whether I use 9 or I use 8, you notice that 9 will give you a midpoint, right? Because you'll have 4 on one side, 4 on the other, and then you'll have one in the center. And so some theorists like to present respondents to survey questions with a middle of the road. I don't have a really strong opinion one way or the other. Others do not like that, and they want to constrain and force people to pick. You know, you can't be sitting on the fence. You have to either be slightly in favor of this or slightly not in favor of it, or think of it as on the scale. And so people can argue about that. The second dimension is how much variation do you want to give people? You know, it could be as simple as 1, 2, 3, high, medium, and low. Then you can go to 5, and then you can go to 7, and so forth. 7-4 seems to be a very highly used scale standard in the industry because it kind of accommodates a little bit of variation and not too much to make it very hard for people to discriminate. Just to point out one thing that happened here, Wolf Ulrich asked a question about one of the scale dimensions on one of the questions. And he said, gee, I can't imagine anybody answering the question so negatively, right, because the way I phrased it, it was awful, right? But that's what you do with a behaviorally anchored scale is you pick extremes and you put one extreme on one end, the other on the low or high end, and then you let people try to figure out where they sit in between those extremes. A 5-point scale makes it tougher because you're always closer to the extreme. 7 puts you further away. So if you say, well, I thought this working group was just horrid, it was awful, it was despicable, whatever the characteristic is on the ineffective scale, I don't have to pick a 1 because I have a 2 available, or a 3 or a 4, right? If I only have 5, then I get closer, and if I only had 3, my goodness, I'm stuck with a middle position, probably, because nobody wants to be on the extremes. I hope that's a little bit helpful.
Very helpful.
Yeah, the other piece of this statistically is that the smaller the scale, the more central tendency you get in the measurement. So if you have a 5-point scale, you're going to find the numbers tend to center around 3. Just because that's the way averages are. You know, some people will give it a 5, some will give it a 1. The great majority will use 4, 3, and 2, and the great majority of those will be 3. And so when you get all said and done, you look at your data and you say, my God, the average person is a 3 on this dimension. What have you learned?
Exactly.
And then you have to go to the comments, right? But if you get a 7-point scale, you might find that you get a 3.8 or a 2.7 or something that would be a little bit better than that middle score.
Thank you very much, Ken. One thing is coming very clearly across is that you know what you're talking about. You now have effectively 6 or 7 minutes just to hit the high points, if you would, on this document. And then from there, I'm going to recommend that we, as a committee, kind of take this up between now and our next meeting and kind of focus on this and help Ken to, see any viewpoints that we have that he's not seen by bringing our thoughts to bear. So, Ken, please go ahead. You've got about 6 or 7
minutes left. So the way this is structured is, right now it's just all text, but obviously this would be in some tool. We can discuss that as we get further into it. There's a welcome and introduction in which we basically lay out who's asking these questions and why. Then there's a section that deals with personal identifying information. Wolf Ulrich asked, do we really need that? I think the answer is yes. I've given a couple of reasons, and those can be discussed separately. This next section deals with the inputs, which I sort of talked a little bit about a few minutes ago. So we're asking, let's just take one question. First of all, everything is on an effectiveness scale. So we're asking the question, how effective was this dimension? And we're trying to be as specific as we can. So we'll look at the very first one. The working group was given a charter/mission. Otherwise, it wouldn't be called a working group. And we're saying in the first one is, with respect to the charter and mission, 1, highly ineffective, means that the charter was confusing, vague, ill-structured, unbounded, unrealistic, in terms of time constraints, unachievable. So the absolute worst sort of possible condition that a charter could be in, right? Very, you would hardly ever expect to see anybody use the 1 But that anchors that edge. We know what that means, what highly ineffective means. And on the other end, highly effective is just the opposite. It's understandable, it's clear, well-structured, it's bounded, realistic, and achievable. And so now I want we want the person to say, with respect to the charter and mission I was given on the working group, I give it a 6 or a 3 or whatever. And each one of these questions moves essentially the same way. So we're asking about the expertise of the working group members. This is another input. How effective the working group can be is dependent to some extent on the expertise of its members. How about the representativeness of the working group members, which is the next one. Then we ask about the external human resources as an input to the working group and how effective or ineffective were they. That, and there we're talking about briefings and experts, consultants, liaison, and so forth. Then we ask about the technical resources, the tools, the platforms, and templates, then the administrative resources. And so that, I think, captures a pretty wide selection of what a working group might be given in terms of inputs to conduct its affairs. The next section, process.
Before you go further, we'll just stop for a moment. It's very clear and very helpful. I need to ask the committee members if they have any thoughts or comments on the information they're looking at now. Is there any others? Okay, I'm not seeing any. I have a question for you, however, if I may, Ken. On the expertise issue, and I'm toggling back and forth between screens, on the expertise issue, it's a very broad question, and the reality is that within a working group, you may have 10 or 15 or 20 people. 50% of them may be really knowledgeable, you know, advanced and usable, and 50 of them, you know, maybe 50% may be completely the opposite or varying degrees. Is there any way we could get a little more knowledge there? Because on one hand, you're going to throw everyone into a basket and say poor when maybe 50% or 70% were good, but a number were so overwhelmingly bad and it caused problems. How could we address something like that?
Ron, that's a great point. That issue actually pertains to every one of these questions. There could easily be representativeness could be the same sort of thing, meaning I've got 2 out of 5 constituencies covered, and somebody might think that's representative enough. Somebody else might think that's a highly skewed group, and you're right about the expertise, of course. I think what we're trying to say is when you're evaluating the working group, when I am as a member, the conditions we're really looking for are ones where the expertise is generally, overall, not effective. So, and that's what we said in the instructions, thinking about the overall effectiveness of the working group, recognizing it's going to have variability, right? Somebody's going to be an expert. If you had one expert and you had a bunch of novices, somebody on the team might say, well, we really did not have a very highly expertise group. But I understand. I'm not exactly sure how to solve the problem, because you'd otherwise be asking them to evaluate each member of the group.
Knowing you, Ken, you will think about this one.
I'll continue to think about it.
Exactly. No, I know your nature. I'm sorry. I'm going to let you go for a few more minutes, and if the committee will stay with me
I'm going to fly through these other sections, and then in processes, what we're looking at there now are the norms and the operations and the logistics and so forth of the group decision making processes that they have. Again, overall effectiveness. So, how participative was the climate in the working group? What was the overall behavior of the members in terms of people being disruptive and argumentative, disrespectful, and those kinds of things, or collaborative, consensus building? Then we want to look at the decision-making methodology, how effective was that, and then the logistics, sort of planning, meeting, agenda, that sort of thing. And then in the products and output section, we're basically looking at, did the working group achieve its primary mission, where effective means that they completely achieved it, and ineffective means that they did not accomplish it, and then you'd have variations in between. Also, the quality of the outputs. It's possible to complete a mission but do it badly, right? And so we want to look both at whether it got done and then how well did it get done. So those are the two dimensions I thought of in that section. And then after that, it was sort of, wouldn't we be interested, or at least I would be interested, in knowing how people felt about the experience? It's a slightly different dimension than the working group's effectiveness, but it would give us some interesting information about how people felt about the experience in terms of their own participation, which is the first question, their own fulfillment, second question. And because if people generally found themselves being highly rewarded as a result of participating in a work group, if we got high scores overall in that, I think that would be a great recruitment element to make. You know, people come onto these working groups, and at the end of them, they feel very good about what they did, not only their own participation, but how rewarding it was for them to have done it. Now, if we get the opposite answer, then there's additional work to do, right? But it's important to know, it seems to me. And then there's some demographic-type questions. Just how did you learn about it? How long have you been involved with ICANN? These are variables that we can sometimes do cross-correlations with to determine, you know, do we find that people who have been with ICANN longer feel this way better about this than that? And that just gives us some statistical ability to analyze the information. And that's pretty much it, except for an overall comment box at the end.
Well, I think it's an exceptional piece of work from my point of view, and I think committee members would share my appreciation for, you know, the difference between what we had and where we are now. It's worlds ahead, and thank you for that. I would, as we're coming now to the end of our call, I would ask the I see Mikey has a hand. I'll come to you in a second, Mikey. I would just ask the committee to please have a good long look at this so that we can, again, give our last and final input to Ken, and then perhaps submit it further to our others to review. Mikey, please go ahead.
This is Mikey. I just wanted to chime in on that same theme. I think this is looking really good, Ken. I think I got a little bit down the rat hole, and I appreciate you accommodating my question, but especially given how in flux our charter is, I think it's great that you push this through, because this will stand as a great tool no matter what our charter winds up being, and I think that we will be able to make use of it again no matter what our charter is. So mostly just a huge thanks and thumbs up for this.
Thank you, Mikey. I'll chime in. Thank you for having spent the time with Ken working through this. Excellent. So we're now 1 minute past the hour. I'd like to ask if there's any other business that we need to discuss at this time. All right. And, Julie, unless there's anything left on the agenda that I'm not aware of, we will bring this call to a close and thank everyone for their participation. Look forward to seeing you all in Durban in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
Bye for now.
Thank you all. Thank you, Ron.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye now.